Okay, but your letter mentioned a magic monkey paw? I really feel like you're burying the lead here, Mr. White said to his old friend, Sergeant Major Morris. Their friendship went way, way back. Though they had taken different paths in life. Morris had gone into the military and had just returned from India. White had stayed in England, married, worked a factory job, and struggled to put food on the table. Sergeant Major Morris was successful, but alone. And White was poor, but he had a loving wife and a son that was his greatest source of pride. He had been writing his old friend, Morris, when the Sergeant Major mentioned that, one, he would be near White's house in England soon, and two, he had a magic monkey paw. He stopped by on a rain-soaked night while White and his son were sitting around playing chess, and now he didn't want to talk about his magic monkey paw. Hey, I respect your wishes, buddy, old Mr. White said to his friend. On a completely unrelated note, have another whiskey. It took two pretty healthy pours of whiskey for Morris to lean in with a glint in his eye.
All right, you want to hear about the magic monkey paw? He said.
Only if you're comfortable talking about it, friend, Mr. White said as a smile spread across his face. Though the answer was actually, oh my gosh, yes, it's a magic monkey paw.
All right, Morris began.
This is going to sound ridiculous, but it grants wishes. An old holy man made it to show that fate ruled people's lives, and people could only meddle with it to their own sorrow or something. We weren't paying attention and, you know, had a magic monkey paw. So we started to put it to good use.
We? Mr. White asked. He, his wife, and his son were all listening very intently now.
Yeah, it was the first guy to use the paw. We never really talked about what he wished for, Sergeant Major Morris said.
I'm hearing a lot of past tense here, White interjected.
Well, of course. He died, continued Morris. His third wish was for death, which, don't know why, also didn't throw up any red flags for me. It really should have, though. Word to the wise, when a suspicious-looking holy man offers you a magical item and says it's cursed, you should probably believe him. This thing's been nothing but trouble for me. I got my three wishes, though now I kind of wish I hadn't. I think I'm just going to burn the thing so it can't hurt anyone ever again.
I wouldn't mind having a monkey paw, Mr. White said. His wife nodded.
What? Sergeant Major Morris burst. Didn't you hear anything I said?
No. I get that you think it's bad, but I mean, maybe I could beat fate, Mr. White suggested, now sitting on the edge of his seat.
Maybe you were just wishing for the wrong stuff.
Okay, I'm going to circle back and just sort of verbally underline the point that the holy man made about not doing exactly what you just said. It's not about how you word things. It's not about what you wish for. You cannot beat fate. I learned some pretty rough lessons I don't want to go into right now, Morris said.
Yeah, but it's three wishes. You can wish for anything. Who wouldn't want that? Said Mr. White, eyeing the dried up animal appendage with about as much subtlety as Gollum eyed the One Ring.
Anyone who listened to the story I just told you, listen, buddy, here's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to give it to you. Instead, I'm tossing it in the fire right now.
And Sergeant Major Morris did just that, before continuing. If you want it so badly, you can just dive into the
Oh, you're actually diving into the fire to get it. Fantastic.
I'm Jason Weiser. From Bardic, this is Fictional.
Mr. White raised the singed monkey paw above his head in triumph, his family smiling in its shadow. Even in his current state, Morris sat shaking his head.
Wait, so how do I use it?
Mr. White asked his old friend, who was face-palming in his chair and looking for a fourth glass of whiskey. You raise it over your head and make your wish aloud in a kind of over-the-top gesture, Morris mumbled as he poured.
Oh, okay, weird, but when you showed me a little while ago, I could have sworn that the fingers were curled down.
Now they're straight, White observed. That's because they were curled down. It resets when it gets a new owner. Like I said, or tried to say, the paw is really something you don't want to mess with, Morris said.
So I should wish for two more sets of arms.
His family cracked up at his funny, funny joke. That Mr. White, he was such a great 19th century comedian.
Okay, you know, that's exactly what I meant when I said not to mess with it, Morse said. You have a cursed monkey's paw. Maybe treat it with a little bit of respect. The night wore on, and White and his family almost forgot about the monkey's paw. But Sergeant Major Morris did not. White pressed a little money into Morris's hand for the trinket as Morris left, but his old friend just cautioned him to please, please be careful with the monkey paw. He should really think about the words that he utters, because they could have great and terrible consequences. Then, with a face awash in anxiety, Morris rushed off to catch the last train back into the city. A few minutes later, White sat on his piano bench, looking at the mummified monkey's paw. It was such a strange little thing. His son Herbert, a young man in his early 20s, came and patted him on the back, asking him what he was going to wish for. White chuckled. He and his son were close, and despite White struggling early in life, he was happy now. He was nearly retired, and his son was making his own way in the world just fine. White had married the love of his life and had years and years with her. It all was pretty good. Well, first, very funny, White said. It's just a trinket. Though, it does make you think. I honestly can't think of a wish. I have everything I've ever wanted with you and your mother. Our little life might not be much, but it's kind of great. You know what would be really great, though? Herbert ventured. Those 200 pounds that we need to pay off the house. Then you'd be free. Mr. White shrugged and looked at his wife, who nodded. Well, I mean, what would be the harm in wishing for a little bit of money? Mr. White added with a chuckle. Nothing greedy. Just a little something to speed up my retirement. All right, let's do this. And before we get to the wish, this was written in 1909. So with inflation and all that, 200 pounds sterling would be worth about 25,000 US dollars in today's money. So yeah, even though it's a necessity, it's still worth a good bit of money for this cash-strapped family. He held out the monkey's paw in a grand gesture, with a mock terrified look on his face, and struck a few impressive chords on the piano before bellowing, "I wish for 200 pounds." A very on-the-nose crash from the piano followed his words. Mr. White jumped to his feet in terror. Could have sworn that the thing just moved in his hand. Then he had dropped it and it crashed down on the keys. The family was puzzled and they agreed that, if that was true, it was really spooky. But they also agreed that he had kind of a lot of whiskey with Morris, so White insisted that the monkey's paw had moved, pointing out that one of its fingers had curled down. But Herbert and Mrs. White were pretty sure that that finger had always been down. Mr. White said he could have sworn. Anyway, it didn't matter. He said it wasn't like they were going to see that money. Not for years, at least. He and his son sat down by the fire, smoked their pipes, and talked, as they did every night. Herbert joked about how the money was going to show up. But a feeling of malaise began to grow in White. He felt uneasy, like he had just invited something into his life that didn't belong there. His mouth burned from the pipe, and stale whiskey sat on his tongue. And he felt like something hovered just on the edges of his awareness. A crushing, creeping darkness. And terrible consequences. Dad! Hey! White snapped back to reality as his son was waving his hands in front of his face. I said I'm going to bed. Sorry to scare you. I have to be up early tomorrow for work. White nodded and said goodnight to his son. He relit what was left of his pipe, and when he was finished, he set it on the table and drifted to sleep in front of the dying fire. It wasn't so much a dream as an image. In the fire before him, a monkey's face smiled a sinister smile, the embers glowing on his face like hellfire. When White awoke an hour later in terror, he grabbed a glass of water nearby and dashed it on the fire. Breathing heavily in the darkness of the room, he inched his way safely to the stairs and his bedroom. But when he passed the table, his hand rested on the monkey paw, with its one finger curled down. White shrieked and ran as fast as he could away from the thing. The next morning, White sat down at the breakfast table and took a deep breath. He stared at the monkey's paw. That thing was creepy, definitely. But he reminded himself that it was just a dry little monkey hand. Really, it was no bigger than a salt shaker. In the light of the morning, those things that haunted the shadows were obviously just ridiculous superstition. Surely the monkey's paw held no more power than any other shriveled animal appendage. Herbert, the son, stood up from the table, saying that it was time for him to go. If the riches showed up before five, or if his father decided to wish himself the emperor of the world, he'd be at work. So try not to let absolute power corrupt him absolutely before, like, six in the evening. They'd have to disown him. It would be a whole thing. Mr. White chuckled. Very funny. Mrs. White patted her son on the back as he left for work, and then watched proudly as he walked down the path to catch the train. Herbert was a good kid. Well, not even a kid anymore. He was a man. Mr. White was next, though he only had half a day, and he returned by mid-afternoon. The monkey's paw just stuck in his head all day, and as he poured himself a beer that evening, he kept insisting that the thing had moved when he made a wish last night. "I believe that you believe that it moved when you made a wish," Mrs. White said. "But I also believe that you had kind of a lot of whiskey with Morris. Now, if we could not have this conversation for the 12th time today, I have a more pressing question. Like, who is that guy? And why has he been hanging around the street in front of our house for a half an hour?" White stood. Yeah, that was confusing. They were two trains from anywhere of note, and then a long walk after that. They were on the edges of the moorlands, the type of place you only visited with a purpose. Mr. White set his beer on the table. The man did keep looking up at the house. Funny guy. Silk hat and all that. He wondered if the man was from the bank and asked Mrs. White if they had paid this month. "We won't have any more payments soon," Mrs. White said with a laugh. "Okay, yeah, that joke's getting a little old, even by early 1900 standards. I'm gonna go see what he wants," Mr. White said. But Mr. White didn't need to go see what the man wanted. The stranger in the silk hat, with an envelope tucked under his arm, took a deep breath and steeled himself, opening the White's gate and marching straight to the front door. Mr. White opened the door as the stranger approached. The man asked if they were the Whites. The couple nodded. The man said he had important news for them. Could he come in? Inside the small house, the man sat there in silence until Mr. and Mrs. White were seated across from him. "I was asked to come speak to you," the man said, not making eye contact. "I come from Ma and Megan's." "Oh, how's everyone there doing?" Mr. White said amicably. But Mrs. White could feel it. Something was off. Why was this man from Herbert's work here when Herbert wasn't home yet? "What's going on?" Mrs. White asked, her hand already starting to shake. Mr. White looked at his wife's face, already drained of all color, but waved it off. Of course this man hadn't come with bad news. I mean, right? Right? Then, Mr. White looked at the man who had come from Ma and Megan's, and could see that his face was nearly as pale as Mrs. White's. "Tell me you haven't come with bad news," Mr. White said to the stranger. "I am so sorry," the man from Herbert's work said. Mrs. White leapt to her feet. "Is he hurt?" she demanded. "Badly," the stranger replied, but he added that Herbert wasn't in any pain. Mrs. White understood instantly and broke down in tears, burying her face in her husband's shoulder. It took Mr. White another moment before he, too, grasped that his son was dead. He held his wife as she sobbed, and he tried not to. "He was caught in the machinery," the stranger said, not really helping. There was a long silence while the elderly couple held each other and tried to comprehend a world without Herbert. That he could be gone so suddenly. They were just playing chess together last night. He had joked with them that very morning. Now he was gone? The stranger had one more thing left to do on this trip. He brought out the envelope and cleared his throat. Before he began, the stranger announced that he wanted the grieving pair to remember that he was a mere servant of the company, and that this wasn't a throw-stuff-at-the-messenger situation. The firm of Ma and Megan's wanted to express their deepest sympathy, but also to say that they disclaim all responsibility and admit no liability at all. The stranger winced, but he saw the White simply staring in disbelief at his crass audacity. No one had hit him yet, though, so this was going well. Now that that extremely inappropriately timed legal disclaimer was out of the way, the stranger could move on to slightly better things. He said he knew it was no replacement, but they had something for them. For Herbert. Everyone loved him. Had loved him. and he would be missed by the company. As such, they wanted to offer the Whites a certain sum of compensation. Compensation? Mrs. White screamed in disbelief, but Mr. White froze. How much? He asked the stranger. Not as much as your son deserved, the stranger continued, but it's a good sum. £200. A chill ran down Mr. White's spine. £200. £200. No. It couldn't be. It couldn't be the exact sum that he had wished for from the cursed monkey's paw. It couldn't come to him like this. His mouth was dry, and he tried to speak, but the words just wouldn't come. The room was spinning, too. He tried to put his hand on the table, but the table wasn't there anymore. Nothing was there. The darkness crept in from the edges of his vision, and as he lost consciousness, he saw the smiling, sinister simian face. It all happened so quickly. The company and the undertaker and everyone who had seen the corpse had been pretty adamant that Herbert be buried as soon as possible. He had been brutally mangled by the machine. It was 2 days later that the group left Mr. and Mrs. White at Herbert's fresh grave, wondering what they should do now. The couple shuffled on for days, each suffering in their own way, but barely exchanging a word. Getting out of bed was now a Herculean task. They could live and move on, but what was the point? They would just die soon anyway, and that would be it. They had to bury their son, and their lives would never be the same. Mr. White just stayed awake, sitting before the dying embers and remembering the night he had wished for the money. It was a joke. A joke. He never meant it to come true. It was never meant to cost them their beloved Herbert. He heard something in the back of the room. It was his wife. This was the first time he had seen her up at this hour. Mr. White barely slept, while Mrs. White slept all the time. He asked his wife to come and sit with him. It was too cold back there. It's much colder for Herbert, she replied. Mr. White wept. As she moved carefully in the darkness, Mrs. White's hand came to rest on the money, and she gasped. They had left it sitting there after the man from Ma and Megan's came by. To throw it away and curse it would make Herbert's death completely pointless. But to spend it was sacrilege. Not knowing what to do with it, it remained on the table until Mrs. White's hand touched it that night. Have you destroyed it? She asked. They both knew what she was talking about. Mr. White had not destroyed it. It sat on a shelf as far back as possible in the parlor. He told Mrs. White as much before she ran to her husband and kissed him. She laughed an empty, mad laugh. Mr. White was confused, but she looked right at him. Don't you see? We could do it, Mrs. White exclaimed, the whites of her eyes glowing in the light of the dying fire. Mr. White slowly realized what she was saying, and he gasped. They could do it. They could bring Herbert back. It was too much to bear, losing their child in the prime of his life for a mortgage payment. And all the while, they were just sitting there with the answer. Yes, they could do it. They could bring Herbert back with the monkey's paw. But then, Mr. White had a change of heart. No, he said. What do you mean, no? Mrs. White returned. Our first wish was granted. Why not the second? That was a coincidence, Mr. White said, though neither of them believed it. Mr. White had gone over it too many times in his head. There was no way it was a coincidence. He had killed his son with a wish. He knew it. He felt it. And he would carry it with him for the rest of his life. You know it wasn't a coincidence. We killed him. We all did. But we can fix it. We can bring him back, said Mrs. White, her eyes wide and fierce. No, it's not right. It's too dangerous, Mr. White said. Not right? It's not right that he died in the first place. Now the thing that brought it about can restore him to us. Then we can destroy it. Are you really so cold that you don't miss him? Did you want our son to die? Mr. White couldn't contain it. He missed his son more than he ever thought possible. There was a big, painful hole in their lives, and things would never be the same. It was dark in the room, so Mr. White couldn't see the smile that spread across his wife's face. She was holding out the monkey's paw. "If you really, truly miss him, then wish," Mrs. White said calmly. "No," Mr. White said, trailing off. "It's not right." "Wish," Mrs. White said, and pressed it into his hand. The thought of seeing Herbert once again was too wonderful. It was a bright spot in the darkness that had been his life for the past weeks. Maybe everything could be okay again. Maybe they could be a family once more. "I wish my son alive again," Mr. White said, before slumping onto his chair. There was no mistaking it this time. Another finger on the monkey paw had curled down. He trembled and wept. His son would be returned to him, but he would be brought back from the dead with magic. This was dark stuff, and he didn't know what his son would be like, how that would change someone. He shuddered at what he had just done, but then nothing happened. With every passing minute, Mr. White felt lighter and lighter. He supposed he had wished for too much. Even the monkey's paw had limits, it seemed. He was still mourning his son, but as terrible as it felt, it was natural. He wasn't bending the laws of God and man to alleviate his temporary pain. Mr. White left the monkey's paw on the floor and shuffled off to bed. A half hour later, his wife joined him. She laid next to him, and he held her. They had tried all they could, but still, their son was gone. Then, they heard a knock. "What was that?" Mrs. White asked and shot up. Mr. White didn't answer. His heart sank. "It's Herbert," she cried, leaping from the bed and running from the room. Mr. White heard a crash, and Mrs. White cursing to herself about blowing out the lamps. She screamed to the door and to Herbert that she'd be right there. Mr. White couldn't take it any longer, and finally leapt from bed, too. He found his wife fumbling around in the darkness, trying to find the door to unlock it. "I forgot that we buried him 2 miles away," Mrs. White exclaimed. "Of course it would take him a while to get here, especially without the trains running." She yelled again to Herbert that they'd be right there. The knocking turned to a pounding, which was odd. Herbert had never done that sort of thing before when he was alive. He was always such a polite and considerate man. Mrs. White yelled for her son to hold on. She just needed to find Locke from behind the closed door. And then she turned to Mr. White. "Why are you not helping me? Our son is outside, in the cold." The door was shuddering on its hinges as the pounding became more and more intense. It shook dust that had been there for ages. Something wasn't right. Mr. White heard a gurgling and a shuffling on the other side of the door as his wife found the lock and then tried to open it between Herbert's pounding. It hit him. And as the color drained from Mr. White's face, he yelled for his wife to stop. "That's not our son." He shouted, but Mrs. White wasn't listening. She almost had the door open. Mr. White realized in horror that he had wished his son alive, but not healed. Their son had been pulled into a machine and mangled beyond recognition. Whatever was on the other side of that door wasn't their son as they had known him, but something twisted, monstrous, in indescribable pain, but unable to die. He tried to pull his wife away from the door, but she elbowed him back. That's when he remembered what he had left on the floor, the monkey's paw. He dove to it and held it in his hand. He had a moment of hesitation, but Mr. White made his final wish. A moment later, Mrs. White was able to get the door open. Herbert had stopped pounding long enough to relieve the strain on the lock. She flung it open to see nothing. Nothing but a wide and empty road dotted with lamps, weaving through the landscape back to town. Nothing but a quiet and deserted road. Inside the house, the monkey's paw thudded to the floor, its third finger curled down. Mr. White had gotten his wish. The story today is titled The Monkey's Paw, and it's by the author W.W. Jacobs and was first published in England in 1902. It is a classic story of unintended consequences and of the price of messing with fate. I posted it on the website, on fictional.fm, if you want to read the story in its entirety. Also, I won't do this every time, but if you like the show today, I ask that you please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It's incredibly helpful for a show early on. It helps more people find us. So if you have time and the inclination, you can find the show there at apple.fictional.fm. And now it's time for the best of the worst. This is a segment of the show where I'll profile a villain from fiction. It'll likely have nothing to do with the main story, like today. We're going to talk about Kite Man, a Batman villain. Kite Man, well, he's like Batman, but with kites. If it sounds like a bad idea to base your whole criminal identity on a children's toy that only flies like 30% of the time, well, that's Kite Man. He was taken seriously his first time out in 1960, when he actually got the kite-related drop on Batman, knocking out the Dark Knight and taking him captive. Batman used the wool from his socks and the wallpaper in the room to, of course, make a bat kite, which he used to fly from his barred window. Neither Kite Man nor his goons that he sprung from prison, riding a kite, saw the bat kite, but Robin did and came to Batman's aid. They used a strobe light kite and net kite to subdue Kite Man's thugs. Despite being Kite Man, with a kite symbol on his chest, Kite Man's mode of transportation is a hang glider. He took off in that from his cliffside home, but Batman rode down on a decorative dragon kite and kicked him in the face. By the time Kite Man regained consciousness, Gordon and the Gotham PD had arrived, and the wind-dependent assailant went to prison for over a decade. A heavily sideburned Batman faced off with Kite Man again in the 70s. This is just a stupid annoyance of mine, but Kite Man in the 70s, once again, used his hang glider, and not only had remote-controlled kites, but every kite in the issue is just free-floating in the air, without a string. I looked it up, and by definition, a kite has to be tethered to something to be considered a kite, and also to fly. That's how kites work. So there's only one kite present in the 1970s version of Kite Man. It's flown by a kid at the end, while Batman muses aloud why some men never grow up. Yes, the guy dressed as a bat, whose life is defined by a childhood tragedy, is making fun of the, if you think about it, only slightly less ridiculous Kite Man. I should say that, while I'm being snarky, I am a massive Batman fan. If you think about it even a little, it's kind of ridiculous, but still, I love Batman. Anyway, once again taking a bat boot to the face, Kite Man went away to prison again until the 1980s, when he resurfaced briefly as a villain of Hawkman. He's less serious by this point, and the writers gave him a secret identity and a backstory. His name is, no joke, Chuck Brown, who always had a childhood fascination with kites, so he became a kite-related super-ish villain. In the 80s, he avoided the bat boot to the face and went headlong into a Kite Man-eating tree. Legends never die. But Kite Man does. He was found without his kite by Deathstroke and tossed off a building when he refused to join the Secret Society of Supervillains, also known by the snappy acronym SSOSV. He actually survived the fall, though, but went on to anger a powerful supervillain who captured him and ate him. Yeah, the world changed a lot from the 1960s to the early 2000s. But don't despair, because with the DC Rebirth that launched last year, Kite Man is back. He was quickly foiled by a new Gotham hero, though, and after just one issue, he was sent back to prison. On the plus side, he has a snappy new catchphrase. Kite Man, hell yeah. Okay, so I get that he's trying to make kites cool and edgy and villainous, but I don't think he's going to make this new catchphrase happen. Thanks for listening to the first ever episode of Fictional. Today's episode was written by me, Jason Weiser, and edited and produced by Carissa Weiser. Our theme song is by the amazing Breakmaster Cylinder. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.